The Enterprise plows through space with Sulu at the helm. Kirk wanders in front of the con, looking slightly distracted. He goes up to Uhura.
Engineering control. Environmental.
Anything, Lieutenant?
No, sir. I've tried every major transmitting station on Denver. None of them have acknowledged my contact signal.
Try GSK-783, subspace frequency 3.
But, sir, that's a call sign for a private transmitter.
I'm very well aware of that, Lieutenant. Try it.
Yes, sir.
Evaluation, Mr. Spock.
As I speculated, Captain, the overall pattern of mass insanity destroying civilizations follows an almost straight line through this section of the galaxy. Over here, the Beta Portalan system, the ancient civilizations. Archaeologists have given us information indicating that they were the beginning. 200 years ago, Lavinius V was swept by mass insanity. Then Theta Cygni 12. The last was Ingram B, 2 years ago.
And next in line, Denver. Bones, what's your theory about the cause of all this?
There is no medical or scientific cause for what happened on those planets, Jim.
But it follows a definite pattern, a systematic progression from planet to planet.
Captain, we're picking up a ship on our sensors, heading directly into the Denovan sun. He'll burn up.
Plot an interception course, Mr. Sulu. Warp factor 8, Lieutenant Uhura, try to contact that ship.
Aye, yes.
Kirk settles into the command chair. On the view screen is a distant red sun.
Ship is a one-man vessel of Denovan configuration, Captain. He does not seem to be out of control. His course is straight for the sun.
Scotty, tractor beams?
Out of range, sir.
Kirk purses his lips.
Making contact, Captain.
Denovan ship, this is the USS Enterprise. Can you reverse your course? Acknowledge.
Captain, we'll get too close to the sun.
Keep closing. Denovan ship, reverse your course. Do you hear me? Reverse your course. Acknowledge.
Outer hull temperature now 480 degrees and rising.
The sun is getting larger and larger on the view screen.
He's too close, Captain.
So are we. Hull temperature 1,000 degrees and rising. Sun's gravimetric pull increasing.
I get it. It's finally gone. I'm free.
You burned up, Captain.
Reverse course, 180 degrees about. I see.
The light flooding the bridge from the view screen dims as Sulu steers the Enterprise away. Behind Kirk at her console, Uhura watches anxiously. Spock looks up from his scanner.
All clear, Captain. Hull temperature falling, gravimetric pull approaching tolerance level.
Very well. Reduce the subwarp speed. Take us to Denver.
Aye, aye, sir.
That Denovan ship headed deliberately into the sun. Why?
There's one possibility. The mass insanity may have reached this planet, too.
Captain, I'm having difficulty on that transmitter call to Denver.
Keep trying.
Yes, sir.
Jim, your brother Sam, his family, aren't they stationed on this planet?
Kirk stares anxiously at the forward view screen.
Space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the starship Enterprise. Its 5-year mission, to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Star Trek, created by Gene Roddenberry. Starring William Shatner, also starring Leonard Nimoy as Mr. Spock. Operation Annihilate.
Captain's log, stardate 3287.2. The mass insanity we have tracked across this section of the galaxy seems to have already touched Denver. That planet, colonized over a century ago, is one of the most beautiful in the galaxy.
Planet development is normal, Captain.
Originally colonized as a freighting line base in this area.
Aye. They make regular trips from here, carrying supplies to the asteroid belt for the miners and bringing cargo out. I've made the run a couple of times myself as an engineering advisor.
No Federation contacts for over a year.
Captain. I made contact with your private transmitter, sir.
Put it on audio.
Please hurry. Help us. I don't have much time. They'll know. Please, please,
Aurelin,
help us.
This is Jim on the Enterprise. Repeat your message.
Contact broken, sir.
Reestablish.
I'm sorry, sir.
I'm not interested in your excuses, Lieutenant. Reestablish contact with that transmitter.
I'm afraid that's impossible at the moment, Captain. They stop broadcasting immediately. They do not acknowledge my contact signal.
Keep trying to raise them.
Yes, sir.
Jim, did you know who that woman was?
Yes. You were right a while back. My brother Sam lives on Denver. He's a research biologist. That woman sounded like his wife, Aurelin.
The Enterprise establishes orbit around the blue, Earth-like planet. In the transporter room, Kirk briefs McCoy, Scotty, Yeoman Zara, and Bobby.
Set your phases on stun. We're going to beam directly into the capital city. Alert status.
Mr. Spock.
Lieutenant Uhura has had no further response to our signals. Sensors report the expected number of humans on the planet's surface. However, they are strangely quiet. Very little activity.
Kirk ponders for a moment, then turns to Zara.
I'll want a complete transcript of everything that happens down there, Yeoman.
Yes, sir.
Let's go.
The six strong landing party take their positions on the transporter pads.
Energize.
They beam down next to a large square pool in a futuristic city of low concrete and glass buildings. With Kirk leading, they set off across a large open plaza. The place is completely deserted. They pass a building that has a cluster of tall white tetrahedrons on the roof, like a range of perfectly symmetrical mountain peaks. Kirk brings the party to a halt.
There are almost 1 million inhabitants of Denver. There's more than 100,000 in this city alone. Where is everyone?
They're here, Captain, in the buildings. Strangely quiescent.
My brother's lab is over there. They signaled us once. There should be someone there. Let's find out what's happening.
Captain, several people approaching.
Four men in colored overalls charge towards them, waving clubs.
Go back! Get out of here, please! Run! Get away! Go away! Get out of here!
Stand by to fire.
Get out of here.
Fire.
McCoy crouches down beside the fallen men.
Did you hear what they said, Mr. Spock?
Indeed, they seemed most concerned for our safety.
They tried to brain us with these clubs. Check them out, Bones.
Their attitude was inconsistent with their actions.
To say the least.
There's something wrong, Jim. Their nervous systems. Unconscious like this, there should be just routine autonomic activity. But I'm getting a very high reading, as though even in their unconscious state, they're being violently stimulated.
Fan out, follow me.
They run in the direction of Kirk's brother's lab.
Security.
Kirk takes the woman in his arms. McCoy gives the hysterical woman an injection and Kirk eases her into a chair. A man and a boy lie on the floor.
Aurelin, you're safe now.
Is this your brother, Jim?
McCoy is crouched between the bodies of the man and the boy. With trepidation, Kirk leaves his sister-in-law's side, walks over to the man's body, kneels, and turns it over. The man is identical to Kirk, but has a moustache.
Oh. Sam. It
is my brother. Was my brother.
I'm sorry, Jim. The boy is unconscious, but he's still alive.
Peter.
Kirk stares intently at the red-headed boy, who's about 12. Peter stirs slightly.
I'd better get the boy and the mother back to the ship, Jim. I can't do much for them down here.
Get ready to beam up.
Go ahead, Enterprise. Prepare to beam up party of four.
Kirk leans against a wall, looking devastated. Spock comes up to him.
Captain, I understand how you...
Yes. Yes, Mr. Spock. You heard my sister-in-law say something about they being here. Your guess.
Notice the ventilator, Captain. Apparently, they were trying to keep something outside from getting in. Obviously, they were not entirely successful.
That doesn't make sense. There are no harmful life forms reported. Our sensors didn't pick up anything that didn't belong here.
That is correct. I am at a loss to understand it.
Ready to beam up, Captain. I'd like you to be on board when your sister-in-law regains consciousness.
Take charge of the landing party, Mr. Spock. I want some answers to all this.
In the sick bay on board the Enterprise.
I won't be able to give you the exact cause until I get the plates back from the lab. They're both in extreme pain. I sedated them heavily. But your sister-in-law seems to have a high tolerance. The tranquilizer hasn't affected her much.
Can't you talk?
Yes.
Kirk goes to Aurelian's bedside. Peter is in the neighboring bed.
Still alive.
He squeezes her hand.
You've got to help us.
You are here. It is you, Jim.
Yes, I'm here.
She tries to smile.
You have to tell us what happened, Aurelia, to you and the others.
They came 8 months ago. Things. Horrible things. Visitors brought them in their vessel from a planet, Ingrap B.
What kind of thing?
Not the ship's crew's fault. The things made them bring their ship here.
Aurelian, it's important that you tell us. What kind of things?
Not their fault.
The readings on the biomonitor screen above Reeland's bed fluctuate. Nurse Chapel hands McCoy a hypodermic. He eases Kirk out of the way and injects Reeland.
When she answers questions, any questions, it's as if she's fighting to get the answers out. As though something is exerting pain to stop her.
They use it to control us. They're spreading, Jim. They need us to be their arms and legs. They're forcing us to build ships for them. Don't let them! Don't let them go any further!
The sensor needles on the biomonitor drop, and the red pulsing light that indicates heartbeat is extinguished. Kirk looks down at his dead sister-in-law, trying hard to hold back his emotions. He lets go of her hand, gently puts it down at her side, stands up, and turns round to look at Peter, who's sleeping restlessly. Kirk turns to McCoy and indicates his nephew with a nod. Shell-shocked, he struggles to get the words out.
My brother's son.
I'll do everything I can, Jim, to save him.
His eyes grave. Kirk nods faintly and leaves the sick bay. The Enterprise orbits Denver. Kirk beams back down to the planet's surface to rejoin Scotty, Bobby, Spock, and Zara.
Report. The streets are extraordinarily quiet, Captain. We've seen no other Denovans, and the ones we stunned earlier were gone when we came out.
You've seen some kind of creature? Any alien form?
None, sir. It was just that noise we heard.
A peculiar buzzing sound. We were about to investigate it.
All right. Let's go find out what it is. Set your faces on Force 3 to kill. We're looking for some kind of creature. And we already know it will kill.
They set off with phasers drawn. A little while later, they come down a short flight of stairs into a building. Hearing a noise, Kirk directs Bobby to break off in a different direction. As the rest of the party search a small lobby area, a short distance ahead of them, a number of creatures, like blobs of jelly, are sticking limpet-like to an archway. Kirk spins round.
Spock!
One of the creatures flies at them like a soft, floppy frisbee.
Wolverine!
A succession of the creatures whiz past their heads. They fire at the creatures sticking to the beam. The one that Kirk concentrates his fire on drops to the floor like a large piece of chewing gum. Spock examines it with his tricorder.
Incredible. Not only should it have been destroyed by our phasers, it does not even register on my tricorder.
Captain, it doesn't even look real.
It is not life as we know or understand it. Yet it is obviously alive, it exists.
And it can bear up under full phaser power.
Captain, I suggest we risk taking it aboard.
It's too close in here. Maybe a trap. Let's move out.
The creature that Kirk fired at pulsates and launches itself through the air at Spock. It looks as though a large piece of rotten fruit has been thrown at his back. He collapses.
Spock! Spock!
Spock rolls around the floor with the creature stuck to his back. Kirk peels it off.
It's gone. Can you stand? Spock, are you all right?
Kirk holds Spock, who looks delirious.
Captain's log supplemental. Whatever the creatures are, they have apparently taken over all the inhabitants of Denova. Meanwhile, ship surgeon Dr. McCoy is examining a strange puncture wound left by one of the creatures on Mr. Spock's back.
Nurse.
She sedates Spock.
That's the second time he's come out of. Either he's fighting us, or something inside of him is fighting us.
Doctor, the readings have never looked like that before, not even on Mr. Spock.
McCoy examines Spock. Nurse Chapel looks at the doctor anxiously. His eyes narrow, and he returns her gaze with a grave look.
Just prepare to close.
Nurse Chapel looks at McCoy in disbelief.
Nurse!
Doctor, that's not all you're going to do.
Miss Chapel!
Doctor, there is more of it in him entwined all through his body.
Miss Chapel, if you cannot assist me as required, call another nurse in here. But do one or the other now.
Chastened, Chapel stays. Spock grimaces. Later, McCoy comes onto the bridge wearing a surgical gown and carrying a glass jar containing two small translucent blobs floating in a clear liquid.
How is he? To be very frank, Jim, I don't know that I can do anything for Spock or your nephew. With pieces of some form of living tissue, I removed one from Spock's spinal cord, the other from your sister-in-law's body. They're both the same. Now, the boy's far too weak to touch. Besides, the removal of the tissue wouldn't stop the pain anyhow, as far as I can tell.
Did you operate on Spock in time?
No. I just removed these for examination. His body's full of these tentacles, entwining and growing all about his nervous system.
My nephew?
The same. Evidently, when the creature attacks, it leaves a stinger, much like a bee or a wasp, leaving one of these in the victim's body. It takes over the victim very rapidly. And the entwining is far, far too involved for conventional surgery to remove.
Recommendations?
I'm sorry, Jim. The lab, the science departments. We're all stumped.
Spock is waking up in sickbay.
No. No.
He sits bolt upright.
Spock.
No, I won't.
Mr. Spock.
You're there.
Spock barges out.
Bridge, this is sickbay. Tell Dr. McCoy Mr. Spock just left here.
He's delirious, possibly dangerous.
All deck, security alert. Locate and restrain Mr. Spock. He may be dangerous. Use phasers on stun if necessary.
Spock runs to the helm.
Let's take
Mr. Spock!
He tosses Sulu aside as if he were a rag doll. Kirk and the male bridge crew try to overpower him. He struggles with them. Spock grapples with Kirk, trying to give him a Vulcan nerve pinch. Four men wrestle Spock to the floor as Chapel comes in and hands McCoy a hypodermic.
Damn! I must take it down.
McCoy injects Spock, knocking him out.
Get him back to the sick bay. Use security restraints.
Later in the sickbay, McCoy points to the biomonitor above Spock's bed.
The K3 indicator registers a level of pain. Now watch it as I turn it on.
Spock grimaces as the sensor needle rises to maximum. Then slowly starts to fall back down.
Now that's what he's been going through. I've never seen anything like it. No wonder the poor devils go mad.
Spock opens his eyes, his expression calmer.
Dr. McCoy? Captain?
Spock?
Spock looks down at the restraints pinning him to the bed.
These restraints will no longer be necessary. Nor will your sedatives, Doctor. I'll be able to return to duty. I apologize for my weakness earlier when I tried to take control of the ship. I simply did not understand.
What is there to understand, Mr. Spock?
I'm a Vulcan, Doctor. Pain is a thing of the mind. The mind can be controlled.
You're only half Vulcan. What about the human half of you?
It is proving to be an inconvenience, but it is manageable. The creature, with all of its thousands of parts, even now, is pressuring me.
The pain level on the biomonitor has risen again.
It wants this ship. But I am resisting.
Can he control it the way he says, Bones? Who knows, Jim? I know the amount of pain the creature can inflict upon him. But whether he can control it hour to hour...
I have my own will, Captain. Let me help.
I need you, Spock. But we can't take any chances. We'll keep you confined for a while longer. If you can maintain control, we'll see.
My nephew. If he regains consciousness, will he go through that?
Yes.
Help them. I don't care what it takes or costs. You've got to help them.
Jim, aren't you forgetting something? There are over 1 million colonists on that planet down there. Just as much your responsibility. They need your help, too.
McCoy gives Kirk a hard look and leaves. Kirk, his hands clasped behind his back, ponders for a moment, then follows McCoy out. Waves of pain wash over Spock's angular features.
Vulcan. I am a Vulcan. There is no pain.
His expression becomes cold and calm. He looks at the strap restraints just above his elbows. With a resolute effort, he wrenches them off, then frees his legs and sits up. A tremor pulses across his face. He gets up, leaves the sick bay, and comes into the transporter room, where Scotty and Leslie are working on the console.
Mr. Spock, I thought you were still confined to sick bay.
I was.
Here now, where do you think you're going?
I have an errand on the planet's surface. You will beam me down to the same coordinates as before.
Not likely, Mr. Spock.
That is an order, Mr. Scott.
Aye, sir. And I'm sorry I have to disobey it. The captain said no one was to transport down.
Spock heads for the console.
Mr. Spock!
Spock gives Leslie the Vulcan nerve pinch. Scotty draws his phaser.
Freeze right there, Mr. Spock. Or I'll put you to sleep for sure.
Spock remains perfectly still as Scotty slowly moves round to the console, keeping his phaser trained on his superior officer. He switches on the intercom.
This is Mr. Scott in the transporter room. Get me the captain.
A short time later, Kirk comes in with McCoy and two security officers. Leslie is rubbing his shoulder ruefully.
Mr. Spock, I gave you an order to stay in the sick bay.
Until the pain was gone, Captain. It has been discontinued by me.
Scotty.
He said he was transporting down to the surface, sir. Your orders were that no one was to beam down unless you authorized it. And knowing Mr. Spock's determination on some things, I thought I'd better hold him here until I got your orders.
One of the creatures will have to be captured and analyzed, Captain. We did not have a clear opportunity to do so earlier when I was attacked. Since my nervous system is already affected, as you pointed out, Doctor, I don't believe they could do much more to me.
Jim, this is ridiculous. I don't want my patients running around. He should be in bed.
I'm in complete control of myself, Doctor. The fact that I am here proves that I do not belong in bed.
Kirk suppresses a smile.
Mr. Spock, your logic, as usual, is inescapable. Beam him down. Stay in constant touch with us. Give him your phaser. He'll need that, too.
Scotty hands Spock his phaser.
Thank you, Captain.
Carrying a small orange case, Spock steps onto a pad.
Energize.
Spock beams down. Kirk leaves the transporter room, and McCoy follows him out into the corridor.
Jim, that man is sick. And don't give me any damnable logic about him being the only man for the job.
I don't have to, Bones. We both know he is.
Kirk strides away. McCoy watches him for a moment, deflated. On Denver, Spock walks across a deserted concourse. A Denovan is hiding behind a concrete pillar with a metal club shaped like a giant key. The Denovan lunges at Spock and knocks the phaser from his hand. He holds up the club, ready to strike. The Denovan lunges at Spock with his club. Spock ducks and drops his crazed attacker with a Vulcan nerve pinch. As he picks up his case, his shoulders tense and he grimaces in agony. He picks up his phaser, clips it to his belt, and holds onto the wall, struggling for breath, as he tries to shake off the pain. A short time later, he heads down the stairs where he was attacked on his previous visit. He unclips his phaser from his belt and struggles towards where the creatures are clustered amongst some vegetation in the lobby. they're stuck to the walls as if they've been thrown there. Determinedly suppressing the pain, Spock edges closer to the formless, amoeba-like creatures. He crouches down, his head jerking convulsively as if he had a nervous tic. He aims the phaser at one of the gelatinous creatures. It drops like a pancake falling from the ceiling. Spock slowly gets up and edges closer to the fallen creature, pointing his phaser as he looks around warily at the other creatures all around him. He crouches down and puts his phaser away. The pulsating creature is about the size of a dinner plate. Spock takes out a pair of tongs, carefully picks the creature up and drops it into the case. Later, in a science lab on board the Enterprise.
Come in, gentlemen. I believe you'll find this interesting.
McCoy runs his scanner over Spock's back.
Doctor, your medical skill and curiosity are quite admirable, but I assure you I'm all right.
You may be controlling the pain, Mr. Spock, but you're far from all right.
Unimportant at the moment, Doctor. Please observe.
Spock turns on a machine. Attached to it is the glass container with the creature he collected inside.
Interesting, gentlemen. A one-cell creature resembling, more than anything else, a huge individual brain cell.
Yes, that would answer a lot of questions, wouldn't it?
Do you understand what I'm suggesting, Captain?
I think so. This may be one cell in a larger organism, an incredibly huge organism, in fact.
And although it is not physically connected to the other cells, it is nevertheless part of the whole creature, guided by the whole, drawing its strength from the whole, which probably accounts for its unusual resistance to our phaser weapons.
Existing so differently from any living matter or energy as we know it, that it may have come here, planet by planet, from an entirely different galaxy.
From a place where our physical laws do not apply. We may therefore find it difficult to destroy, Captain.
But not impossible, Mr. Spock. The Denethor that flew into the sun cried out that he was free, that he had won. That's the angle to work on, gentlemen. I want an analysis of all this from medical and life science departments within the hour.
Yes, sir.
Kirk leaves. As Spock returns to analyzing the creature, McCoy switches on the scanner and points it towards him. Spock catches his eye and raises an eyebrow. McCoy glares back, turns the scanner off, and leaves. Later, the creature throbs inside the glass container. McCoy and Chapel are analyzing it as Kirk comes into the lab.
I'm sorry, Captain. I've tried everything I can. Varian radiation, intense heat, even as great as 9,000 degrees.
And you're wasting your time. It has to be something that will kill the creature without destroying the human host.
Which happens to be my point. The thing won't die, even at temperatures and radiation, which would burn Spock and your nephew to ashes.
I can't accept that, Bones. We've got 14 science labs aboard this ship. The finest equipment and computers in the galaxy.
Captain, I understand your concern. Your affection for Spock. The fact that your nephew is the last survivor of your brother's family.
Oh, no, Bones. There's more than two lives at stake here. I cannot let it spread beyond this colony, even if it means destroying a million people down there. Captain's log, stardate 3289.8. I am faced with the most difficult decision of my life. Unless we find a way to destroy the creatures without killing their human hosts, my command responsibilities will force me to kill over a million people. Gentlemen.
I regret I see no other choice for you, Captain. We already know this thing has destroyed three civilizations, perhaps more.
Gentlemen, I want it stopped too, but not at the cost of destroying over a million people.
Including myself, Doctor. And Captain Kirk's young nephew. Understandably upsetting. But once it spreads past here, there are dozens of colonies beyond, and billions of people.
If killing five people saves 10, it's a bargain.
Is that your simple logic, Mr. Spock?
I will accept neither of those alternatives, gentlemen. I cannot let this thing expand beyond this planet, nor do I intend to kill a million or more people to stop. I want another answer. I'm putting you gentlemen on the hot seat with me. I want that third alternative.
Kirk storms out of the briefing room. Later, Spock and McCoy come into Kirk's quarters.
Report.
I'm sorry, Jim. We've been over it and over it. We've made every conceivable test.
I therefore request permission to beam down to the planet's surface. I also suggest your nephew accompany me.
Request denied.
Captain, I do not make this request lightly. I do not know how much longer I can hold out against the pain. But I do know what the boy will go through should he regain consciousness.
Request denied. There must be another answer. Something in the sun killed that thing before the Denovan died. All right. You've tried heat, radiation. What other qualities or properties does the sun have?
It exists physically. It occupies space. It has mass, therefore gravity. It converts matter to energy.
Jim, we've been through it and through it. Radiation, heat.
But one other thing you haven't mentioned.
It's bright. It radiates a blinding light if you're close enough.
Nothing lethal about light.
Not to us. But down on the surface, the creatures stayed in the shadows for the most part. Suppose that they weren't simply hiding. Suppose they're sensitive to light. Light like in a sun, close up.
A possibility.
You can't move Denver closer to the sun, Jim.
No, but you can move the equivalent of the sun to Denver. Mr. Spock?
Yes. In essence, it can be done. A string of satellites around the planet with burning trimagnesite and trivium.
Well, I can rig a test cubicle in the bio lab, put our specimen in it, but I don't.
Good. Let's get on.
Spock and McCoy leave. Kirk has a look of steely determination. Later in the bio lab, Spock opens the door to a cubicle. Chapel carefully puts the glass container with the creature in it inside.
Your figures are, of course, accurate.
Of course. The light of the sun at the proximity where the Denovan declared himself free was 1 million candles per square inch. If this works, the satellites we orbit will produce light of such intensity that even someone in a closed, darkened area will be affected by it.
Ready, Doctor.
Put on your mask.
McCoy hands out silver goggles with red lenses. They hold the masks in place as he pushes a slider on a console. The creature is subject to an intense light.
Completed.
McCoy takes back the masks and Spock opens the cubicle door. They all peer inside at the creature. It lies completely still.
It worked. We can do it.
Kirk turns away, wringing his hands, his face solemn.
What's the matter, Jim? We can do it.
It worked in a lab. With the creature exposed to everything we can give it. But what about the people who are infected?
Well, I don't know. Maybe trial.
Maybe. There's no time for maybes, Bones. We need to know now.
But I'd have to put him.
Yes, we'd have to put someone who's infected under that light.
Do you have any idea of the risk?
We have to duplicate the conditions on the planet. And Spock.
Captain. You'll need a host for the next step in the test. To determine whether the creature can be driven from the body. I am the logical choice.
Do you know what 1 million candlelight per square inch can do to your optic nerves?
There's no other way, Bones. We have to duplicate the brilliance that existed at the moment the Denovan declared himself free.
All right. I'll rig up a protective pair of goggles.
There'll be none on the planet's surface, Doctor.
I agree completely.
Unfortunately, you're both right. It's the only thing we can do. All right, Mr. Spock.
Spock looks at Kirk and McCoy, turns away, and steps into the cramped cubicle. McCoy and Kirk follow him into the door and watch as he settles back in a chair. McCoy closes the cubicle door. On the back of the door is a circular device with a pointed nozzle at its center. Spock steadies himself. McCoy goes to the control console and hands a mask to Kirk. They exchange grave looks.
Mr. Spock's the best first officer in the fleet.
Proceed.
Inside the cubicle, Spock's face convulses, but he looks calm and composed. Kirk and McCoy hold the masks to their eyes, and McCoy pushes up three sliders on the control console. The cubicle is flooded with a searing light.
Completed.
Kirk and McCoy put down their masks, and Kirk hurriedly opens the cubicle door. Spock slowly opens his eyes. Calmly, he gets up and steps out of the cubicle, standing between Kirk and McCoy.
Spock, are you all right?
The creature within me is gone. I am free of it, and the pain.
He walks into a desk.
And I'm also quite blind. An equitable trade, Doctor. Thank you.
Spock feels his way along the desk, and Kirk helps him into a chair. Nurse Chapel rushes in.
Doctor, the result of the first test on the creature's remains.
Kirk and McCoy are staring in shock at Spock. Chapel hands McCoy a report pad and leaves. He reads the report.
Oh, no.
What is it?
I threw the total spectrum of light at the creature. It wasn't necessary. I didn't stop to think that only one kind of light might have killed it.
Interesting. Just as dogs are sensitive to certain sounds which humans cannot hear, these creatures evidently are sensitive to light which we cannot see.
Are you telling me that Spock need not have been blinded?
I didn't need to throw the blinding white light at all, Jim. Spock, I...
Doctor, it was my selection as well. It is done.
Kirk's face trembles with rage.
Bones. Take care of him.
Kirk leaves hurriedly, suppressing his anger. McCoy is stunned. Later on the bridge, Sulu is at the helm and looking at Denver on the forward view screen. Kirk comes up to sit behind him in the command chair.
Completing the seeding orbit, Captain. 210 ultraviolet satellites now in position. 72 miles altitude. Permanent orbit about the planet.
Good. Scanners?
Scanners ready, sir.
Very well. Ready, Helm?
Ready, Captain.
Satellite control, this is the Captain. Energize all satellites.
Affirmative.
All satellites operative, Captain.
On Denver, the creatures stuck to the walls and ceilings pulsate wildly, then fall to the floor. On the floor, they start to smoke and vaporize. Gradually, they melt away, leaving nothing behind but a stain. On the bridge of the Enterprise, Uhura turns round from her communications console.
Captain, receiving messages from a ground station.
Report.
The things are dying, sir. It's working.
The creatures smolder away to nothing.
Sick bay.
McCoy here.
Tell Spock. It worked.
Yes, Captain. You'll be happy to hear that.
Bones. It wasn't your fault. Bones. Bones.
Kirk looks downcast and switches off the intercom. Later as the Enterprise orbits Denver.
Ellen, record this for Starfleet Command.
Ready, sir.
The alien creatures on Denver have been destroyed.
Captain, look, Mr. Spock.
Spock. You can see.
The blindness was temporary, Jim. There's something about his optical nerves which aren't the same as a human's.
An hereditary trait, Captain. The brightness of the Vulcan sun has caused the development of an inner eyelid, which acts as a shield against high-intensity light. Totally instinctive, Doctor. We tend to ignore it, as you ignore your own appendix.
Spock walks away, and Uhura, McCoy, and Kirk exchange bemused looks. Kirk steps up onto the gallery.
Mr. Spock. Regaining eyesight would be an emotional experience for most. You, I presume, felt nothing?
Quite the contrary, Captain. I had a very strong reaction. My first sight was the face of Dr. McCoy bending over me.
Hmm. 'Tis a pity brief blindness did not increase your appreciation for beauty, Mr. Spock.
If you gentlemen are finished, would you mind laying in a course for Starbase 10, Mr. Spock?
My pleasure, Captain.
Kirk takes his seat. McCoy stands beside him.
Unusual eye arrangement. I might have known he'd turn up with something like that.
What's that, Uncle?
I said, please don't tell Spock that I said he was the best first officer in the fleet.
Why, thank you, Dr. McCoy.
You've been so concerned about his Vulcan eyes, Doctor, you forgot about his Vulcan ears. Ahead, warp factor one, Mr. Sulu.
Warp factor one, sir.
McCoy glowers at Spock, who turns back to his console with a wry expression, almost smiling. Behind McCoy's back, Kirk grins. The Enterprise moves away from Denver. This audio description was written and produced at IMS for the Sci-Fi Channel.